You're listening to The Osiris Munir Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, my looms, my luminaries, what's up? What's up? What's up? Before we get started, how are you, everyone out there? I hope you're staying positive. I was just talking about the power of music and sound and how I'm like, come go with me, fly with me over obstacles and adversities. Fly with me over your problem, just like Pegasus, the white horse, soar over everything. So let's give a shout out to our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Senior Real Estate and Probate Specialist, Coldwell Banker 818. 571-1508-818-571-1508. Whatever you need, he will take care of you. Another shout out really quick to my comrades at ArmVPN, VPAN, Veteran Peer Access Network, Manuel Runton, John Falmer, Freddie Marino, and Eric Friend, VSOs, Chandra Young and Richard Carrillo. Thank you. It's an organization that connects veterans in need to other veterans who can assist with housing, legal issues, and more. So please, you guys, the vets out there, if we don't use the services, they take them away. So please, please, please support your local organizations that support veterans. They are not a veterans organization, but they work with vets and veterans work there in the office. It's great. Our guest today, drum roll, woo, comes from a country that I have shared an ancestral line with. I was told that I shared 29% DNA by Ancestry.com, and that country is Nigeria. My guest holds a degree in innovation and design from Johns Hopkins, woo, and an MA in design leadership from the Maryland Institute College of Art. He's the founder and CEO of Fida Design Inc. His work, his book, The Power of Hands. Welcome to the set, my brother, Kelly Dowd. Hey, Kelly, look at the face. You got, look, look how happy he looks.
Look. Thank you. Thank you so much.
We choose to be happy. We choose to be happy. Hey,
indeed,
Kelly.
Indeed, we do. Hi,
wow. Welcome to the set. Let's just get right into the questions. I don't want to miss 1 minute of getting some information. So now, what does the word hand stand for? What is hand? Doesn't it stand for something? What does it stand for?
Hands is actually a system thinking approach that stands for H is humanity, A is adaptation, N is nature, D is design, and S is sustainability. Because without these five critical details, we are nothing, we don't exist, and we cannot actively collaborate. And let's look at this for example. If you are to create a product or a service, you need humanity, that is the age, right? You need adaptation, so adaptivity. You have to think about how this product and how the service you're creating will really help you or help the person that you're creating it for. And the end, which is the critical fundamental part of it, is nature. Because, darling, without the nature, you're nothing. You don't exist. And nature is just the only one that gave us this beautiful freedom that we have today. We are able to wake up, we're able to close our eyes, we're able to like smell, take everything in. That is just because of the beautiful integrated power of nature. And D is the design. Life is a design. Everything that you do is a design. Your product is a design. The service is a design. Because with all of this, right, which the S I will talk about in a second, all of this trickled back to the power of empathy, because at the end of the day, you need empathy, right, in order to be to relate with human. You also need empathy in order to adapt to life. And you also need empathy in order to work simply and symbiotically well with nature, even though that nature is the one who gave you the life that you have today. And design starts with empathy. That is just the whole principle. So that is the end. So with the S comes with sustainability, which means everything that you build, everything that you try to touch has to be sustainable. Because at the end of the day, you have to keep that which keeps your light bulb alive, right? So profits you can trade away. It's part of the whole process. So it just all depends on how you're trying to adapt Hands framework into your life or your organization. So it's a framework that can easily help any person personally and organization as well, including community.
Wow. Never knew the word hands could mean all of that, and how you've been able to thread all of these intricate memories of wording in there that it means. Now, I read somewhere that your mom used to sit beside your mom at the sewing machine when you were very young. And I read somewhere that your mom had a great influence on you because she was a single mom, a teenage mom. And, you know, whoever your mom is, I don't know where she is or what she's doing. You are a badass girl, sister. Look at who you, look at what you did. Look at what you did. Look at what you helped us share. Look at what you gave to the world. So I want you to talk about how growing up like that influenced you and how you think about the world and design and technology as a, as working together.
That is beautiful. And to your point, design, technology, working together, and I will put nature as well. And I would put back to adaptivity and all of that. Because the beautiful part of this is it is very interwoven. It's very integrative. I mean, let's look at what is happening today. We have so fast acceleration of AI, artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. Everywhere you go, it's AI. Everything you breathe, it's AI. What you see, it's AI. It's AI, 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 AI. However, there is a component that is missing, which is the ethical component and which is the integration as well. Because in order for you to successfully integrate AI into what you do, you have to understand, okay, what am I trying to create here? Am I replacing anything? Is this ethical? Am I doing it in the right way? Mm. That takes me back to my mom. Mm-hmm. And my mom's foundation was actually what propelled me to be this person that I am today. My mom was born in Lagos, Nigeria. I was born in Lagos, Nigeria as well, but our family ancestry is from Delta State, Nigeria, which is on the southern part. So my mom was a very young teenager when she had me, and it isn't something that we all wish for a young teenager. However, my mom's unfortunate story became this product here. Yeah. And the beautiful thing is my mom never kicked me out. My mom tried as much as possible to ensure that I have food in my belly, I have clothes on my body, and the most important thing is I have education, because she had to sacrifice our education in order for me to have education exactly and have a life. So what she decided to do is all of the unfortunate circumstances, she turned it into victory for us. You know, she sent me to private British schools. My primary education and my secondary education, they were all British institutions. And of course, I mean, we were colonized by the British.
You can tell.
However, yeah. However, there are some schools that are just so elite. And I went to elite private schools. And that is thanks to my mom. She didn't just stop there. No, she didn't at all. She also ensured that she gave me a seat next to a table, her sewing machine, to be precise, because she was a seamstress. And, you know, whenever she's peddling the machine and doing all of that stuff, here I am, that little boy, just sitting, watching her and taking everything I see into consideration. The way she integrates the technology that she used, the garments, you know, even the needles, the way she handles everything with care and with precision. And talk about the way she collaborates with her apprentices. My mom had apprentices, I remember more than five. However, she treated them like they were her friends. Mm-hmm. So she never yelled or never cursed, never did any of that to apprentices. Okay, these are people that were learning under all. I was observing all this. And you know the funny part? Yeah. The funny part is when she have clients, right, to make a new garment. When she's talking to them, even when the clients are angry and yelling at her, my mom maintains a composure. She's extremely peaceful and quiet. She's taking everything in. And I, as a kid, just right there, sketching what I'm hearing.
Oh, wow.
Artistic flair started developing. And, you know, I'm so grateful that my mom taught me a lot about how to be patient, how to maintain silence, and also how to listen and integrate everything around you to make, you know, the garments better. So she integrated technology, she integrated the data, she integrated the feedback, and she collaborated with the girls.
Yeah. She was a badass. She was a badass. Get it, girl. She's brilliant. Your mom is brilliant. So let's talk about, I don't know what I want to put first because I'm so excited. But let's talk about the Kingdom of Tulum as an allegory and why you choose storytelling to describe how design and AI can work together. I think that's so cool that you can use storytelling as a way to describe how design and AI can work together. I got to hear this. I got to hear it.
Absolutely. And I'm so thrilled to throw this out there. So the Kingdom of Tulum actually birthed from my inspiration of Tulum itself, Tulum, Mexico. Because something about Tulum, Mexico is, I'm a practicing Buddhist. And as a practicing Buddhist, nature is my serenity. That is where I find my serenity. That's where I find hope. That's where I find peace. And the beautiful thing about Tulum is that is exactly what happens when you are in Tulum. You will see a gorgeous architectural home that is so well designed. Yeah, and that is so well designed. And looking at the house, all you will see plants on the walls of the house. So basically, they were able to magically weave in plants, the ecosystem, into building their homes and their community. So that was where that inspiration, I felt, you know what, when I'm describing Tulum to people, to my friends, of where is the place I love the most? And Tulum, by the way, is spelled T-U-L-U-M. And my Tulum, the Kingdom of Tulum, is spelled T-U-L-O-O-M. So... Yes. So when I
you just threw me off, I'm like, okay, I'll work with you.
So when I was telling people the story of Tulum itself, Tulum, Mexico, I tell them the beauty of nature. I tell them the serenity that you get. I tell them how it feels like an oasis and all that. So when I was writing my book, The Power of Hands, which is a trilogy, because what comes next is The Daily Designer, which will be out this summer, followed by Close the Mouth. Close the Mouth means silence. There is power in silence. And that is what Close the Mouth focuses on. So I thought about it. I said, you know what? Storytelling is one of the most powerful tools that you can use to communicate a message to people. And we've lost the art. You only find it in movies or you're finding it in fictions. But when you're talking about books that has to do with intellectual regard, it is so hard for you to see the integration of storytelling. So I felt this is just a perfect way to blend fiction and nonfiction together to tell the story and to make people understand that, hey, it's not that hard for us to integratively collaborate. It's not that hard for us to develop the metrics together as one. And that was what the Kingdom of Tulum actually did. And Roberta, also known as Butter, actually is the protagonist of the Kingdom of Tulum. She is an Afro-Canadian. Mm-hmm. So she is a Nigerian that was born in Canada, and she decided to go back to the Lagos Kingdom organizations to work and to bring back all of the things that she's learned as an urban planner and an architect to build this kingdom. And the rest is history. When you read the book, you will find out more about the kingdom. And also, the other interesting part is you will find out about our poor friends, our poor family, our four-legged family that also really helps everything we do. Yes, because I mean, come on, let's be realistic. We can't talk about collaboration or integration without talking about our pets. Our pets, they never complain. They
Never.
show us the love that nobody else will ever show us. They are always there for us. And the most important thing is they love us unconditionally. So the
Unconditionally.
book will really help you to understand how you can show empathy as our pets show us empathy on a daily basis, and how we can triumph together using integrative collaboration to create that sustainable future that we all desire and dream about.
I like the word integration. And I don't mean integrate. You know, a lot of people, I know we're all coming from a very old Piscean way of thinking where everything is segregated and everybody's separated and nobody does this. But I am almost certain, and I like you being a Buddhist, I'm almost certain that we can, everyone can maintain their own individualism while also being a part of a larger collective. Everyone
Exactly.
can maintain their own individualism while also being a part of a collective. Like we, you know,
Exactly.
when people do things, you know, like, and it's bringing me into the next question I'm going to ask you. We all do things. You described it so beautiful how there's no reason that we shouldn't be intelligent enough to create a matrix that everyone can not only partake of a system, but give back to the very system to keep the system rolling. It's like keeping a wheel churning, but if we don't give back to it, then the wheel starts breaking off and then the spurs come out, this, that, and the other. So you take the letters ROI, which in financial world is something to do with finances or investment, and yours is return on integrity. I think that's so badass, I have to say. That is something. Can you talk about that?
Indeed, and thank you for bringing that up. Because when you think about ROI, return on investment, in my humble opinion, it's actually absolute. And it's something that really makes you think everything is all about money. All of your action is all about money, 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 money. However, return on integrity really have a different twist on that. Return on integrity focus on purpose. So your actions are aligned with your purpose. And let's be realistic, COVID actually showed us a lot. Because with COVID, a lot of people, if we recall, some quit their job because they're like, oh no, I can't keep doing this 9 to 5 anymore. It's not sustainable. Yeah, they were like, oh no, it's not sustainable. I can't do it because well, I don't have a life. And we know how the corporate matrix work.
Yes, we
Your
do.
9 to 5 is not actually 9 to 5. It's basically it's like
We're like nine and
99.
nine.
Thank you. You know, and that is how it works because it's like you don't have any breathing space. Okay, you said you might have weekend. Then the weekend come. Then you're looking at or like okay, so Saturday you feel like oh I'm gonna have cookouts. I'm gonna have this. I'm gonna travel. I'm gonna see the movie. Then Sunday comes. The anxiety descends on you. Your brain, because of how you're already wired to be on
Teach.
the treadmill, yeah, the tread, the treadmill of corporate over and over and over again, and you're so deeply interwoven into that fabric, into that culture that makes you not to think about your purpose anymore. So, return on integrity brings back purpose as the core, which is the alignment between what your actions are saying and what your purpose are. Let's say, if you are a company and your company is supposed to provide, let's say, homes, you run a shelter for homeless people, and you're supposed to provide that. Okay, that is a non-profit organization, factually. What happens is, you know, if you decide to deviate and say, well, let's just find a way to like get more money and just house a few people and give them the, you are deviating from your purpose. That is what is happening. So, which means your integrity is already at stake, and when people find out, you basically lost it because no one will want to like respect you or see you at that community or that organization that focus on people that are suffering. The same thing with individuals. Let's say, for example, I'll use myself as an instance. Oh, I say, oh, my main purpose of going to corporate America is to ensure that I bring change and I make sure that people hire diverse candidates, are hired, they are this, they are that. Maybe I'm an HR person. Then I get into corporate. Then I decided to intertwine myself with the corporate world and say, well, you know, I'm just going to like focus on a particular race because I think they are more intelligent. Oh, I'm just going to focus on a particular race because I think they have more physical strength. Oh, I'm going to focus on a particular gender and things like that. So basically what you are doing is you are already segregating and creating silo, and which is completely not the purpose why you decided to go into HR and corporate in the first place. So that is just a simple, simply term of definition of what return on integrity really entails. So it's a radical idea that means aligning your actions with your core values actually right. lowers your long-term risk and increase your social capital. So return on integrity is all about that social capital. That social capital, social currency that a lot of people don't know that are extremely powerful, will take you anywhere in life. That is what return on integrity is. And if you lose it and focus on return on investment, so be it. What your doomsday is designed is it is.
Wow. I'm just fascinated. Like, wow. That is so interesting how you've been able to take the some of the more intricate aspects of corporate America and humanize them by bringing them into the sphere and context of design and architecture. Yeah. So because you are an architect and you are gifted and the founder of FIDA, which is your design company, yes. In knowing that we are going, AI is not going to go anywhere. So all of you people, I tend to tell them, you hate AI. It's the same people that said they hated cell phones and they hated when we had to use the car instead of the horse and buggy. You the same people. They hated that black folks and white folks are getting along together. It's the same people that hate any change. Anything's changed. Well, I will tell you, AI is not going to go anywhere. You'll be gone before AI leaves, okay? And it won't be going anywhere. It's now here. We got to deal with it. So this wonderful, brilliant man has decided to take that part and then add a human touch. So what I want to know, I'm curious to understand how we will be able to keep humanity involved, because we do have A&I and design and architect working together. So how do we maintain the humanity and human touch in there?
That's beautiful, and I'm deeply grateful you did ask that, because it is critical for us to understand that in order for humans to have a well-improved intelligence, we have to put our guards down. And also, we have to open our mind to adopt this technology, because that is one of the key ways that we will improve. I mean, a lot of people say that, well, the technology is going to replace us, it's going to replace you, it's going to replace that, it's going to be this, it's going to do that. Well, let's go back to history, though, right? Let's go back to all of the eras that we've had. We had the coal mining era. We had the steam machine era. We had the electricity era, right? And now we had the computer era. Now we have the AI era, the advanced artificial intelligence, or like in my book, I call it more advanced technology, because the truth is, you know, this work is a work that will live on for, I hope, centuries to come, because it's something that is deeply relevant in the sense of advanced technology, because the bag is open, the cat is out of the bag, and we can't put the cat back at all. We just have to find a way to constantly learn and adapt, and that is where the A comes from, adaptability. You have to adapt to what is here, because the truth is, if you don't adapt, you'll be left behind.
That's and right.
There are so many stories of people that have been left behind.
Like, and a caveman.
That is Exactly. And sadly, that is why we have some of this painful moments happening in our history today, because a lot of the people that felt that they were left behind, that refused to change with time, that refused to adapt to the technology of time, that refused to open their minds to learn something new, they are trapped and they have to blame somebody else for their pain points. So now what we are saying is, dear listener, you don't have to blame anyone, because right now the cat has run too far. Okay, the cat is still around, and you can still observe the cat and learn from the cat. So you can still learn from AI, and you can still build what you want to build. You can still learn what you want to learn, because this tool is supposed to aid you and not to replace you. But if you decide to, you don't want to do nothing, you just want to sit back and hope that somebody will do and complain, well, I'm sorry. It's you're not going to be involved in the story. So if you want to be involved with the story, and if you want to like help recreate the narrative, you need to understand that, yes, I have to learn. I have to equip myself, and I have to use the tool. And one beautiful thing about AI right now is there are so many models of AI, and there are so many apps out there that you can use to learn. You can use to train yourself, and you can also use to create a new skill. And that is the beauty of AI. So I would say to people, do your as best as you can to quit fighting. Try as much as you can not to fight at all, not to fight the system or the algorithm, or just learn.
And AI is only as smart as you are. Thank AI you. Is my very best friend. All of the things that I used to have to crawl around on Google, and it would take me days to do research, because I like research. I love research. So, you know, to do research and find all these things, you know, and sometimes it will stimulate my thinking, like, you know, I didn't even look at it like that, dude. You know, what's going on? You know, I'm like talking, you know. And then I think that a lot of people, and I'm going to say this, and forever, whoever's out there, get upset. You can get your panties in a bunch. I could really give zero kudos. Okay. We have become so dependent on the system. That's that true. We are really being resistant to taking responsibility for our own stuff. That's there true. Are no more... We remember used to call everything call. Now it's like, look, go online yourself. We ain't got time to be babysitting you. You know, can't you read? Can't you write? And then if there's something confusing, of course, there's still a little bit. But I'm thinking that in a while, that's not going to even be around. They'll all be, you know, they'll all be robotic. Hello, Miss Munir. Hello, Mr. Dowd. May I help you? You know, that kind of thing. Right. It won't be any people there at all. But number one, if you were doing the job, AI wouldn't have come in. See, nothing comes in until there's a need.
There's a need, exactly.
We're lazy. I've worked on the job. You've worked on the job. What do? Sit around and bullshit all day, talk about people's business.
Yeah.
Don't get no work done. Then you get in friendly with a few of the leaders of the company and everything. Then they start doing what they're not supposed to do and not keeping things. Then you wonder why things don't progress and why AI showed up in the first place. Because we're not doing our job. That's why.
And you nailed it. You nailed it perfectly, because, and I'm glad you were able to like articulate it. It's like so good, because you know why? You have the wisdom that a lot of us don't have. And I will say this, right now, there are five distinctive generations in the workforce, okay? Though there are people that, let's say Generation Z, right? There's Generation X, there's Generation Y, the millennials, and baby boomers, however you want to like describe them, and before you know, Generation Alpha will catch up. And all of this generation just really, I mean, some people will say, oh no, these people were born with technology. The reality, from one of the things that I've observed is, no, not everybody that were millennial like me understand the power and the use of technology. No, not everyone that are back to Generation Z, right, that we claim no technology, like the back of their palm, knows the use or the effectiveness of technology. No. So the reality is, now is the time where people of different generations will start bringing their wisdoms together to figure out a way for us to save humanity, because you were spot on. You nailed it perfectly when you said that, well, look at it. We were lazy. And it's true. We were lazy. Yeah, we are so lazy. I mean, if I was on a different, if I could curse, I would curse, but I'm not going to curse at all.
I'm trying not to curse. I was trying not to curse.
I won't do that. But it's just apropos for us to understand that our beautiful and stupid laziness is what actually what gave birth to what we have today and where we are with the advent of artificial intelligence. Because people were like, well, we need to find a way to be more effective. We need to find a way to streamline research and not to waste time. We need to find a way to be able to like create, because people now are spending so much time, to your point, not doing the job. What they are spending time on is, oh, looking at who is on the other desk so they could gossip.
And you know, Kelly, I've been there and you've been there. I know. I remember faking call. I'm faking sick today. You all feel like a big. I got drunk over the weekend.
Yeah, but you know, AI would never fake a call. No, AI would not fake. I'm sick. No, and AI is not going to do that. And the other thing that a lot of people don't understand is AI is not going to complain. AI is not going to say, oh, I'm tired of writing. Please leave me alone. Oh, I have to go home now.
I don't like Cynthia.
Exactly. I don't like Cynthia. Oh, I don't like
Washington. I don't like the bus.
Oh, I can't even collaborate with this person because this person smells awful. No.
You're looking for another job behind your back. AI wouldn't be looking for another job.
No. So I think you know, you nailed it when you said, well, why wouldn't they create AI? Now we have this, we have this tool, and now the same people have started complaining again. They're like, oh my God, no, this is gonna take my job. It's gonna take this. This is a job you don't even want in the first place. That is the same job that you lied. You cost ink for. That is the same job that you had a guy over, you know, and the guy refused to leave in the morning because you guys were still like wrapping your hair and like and doing all of those things behind the closed door. And you call in and say, oh, you know, I had a terrible fall this morning. A terrible fall in bed. Okay, so the cat is out of the bag. We have to, instead of complaining, we have to find a way to work with where we are now, right? Because the reality is it's a system, and in all civilization there is always a new technology that happens. In all civilization, for every era, there's always something new. So you can't say that, oh no, we should not create another technology at all. Okay, let me give you an example that hits to the nerve of a lot of people. Bra that women use. Yes, bra. And, you know, bra today, I mean, bra is the $1 billion industry making them selling a bra, because you know why? It is used worldwide, but bra never existed before. So bra was a technology that came in an era when the need was there.
Brilliantly put.
So it was you know, that era, I remember, she's like, well, I see people, it's just this. I need to design something to make a person feel amazing, to like, to help package their body well, to be well proportioned. I'm going to design a bra, you know, and I learned that in drunk history. Yeah, I learned that in drunk history, and I was just like, wow. And I did my research. Yes, that was how it all came about. And yet today, we use it. I'm sure when it started, people were complaining, oh no, I can't use that, it will make it too tight. Oh no, I can't. Oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no. Because we can't help but complain.
It's human.
We can't help. No, we can't help but complain.
I know. It's a human, you're Buddhist, so you understand. It's a state of life. You know, I was saying before we brought you onto the set, I was saying that everybody is going through something, you guys. Everybody. Even if you have money, you still have people around you that don't have money. You may have to help them. They may be your family or whatever. You know, everybody has some health problems. Even if you don't have health problems, somebody in your family, your friends, you got to go to the hospital. You got to help them out. So we're all integrated and interconnected, whether we really want to be or not. It's stupid. I'm telling you, I got to talk to this brother right here. I'm telling you because I think it's such a waste in time of mental fortitude and life force to be sitting around worrying about stuff that you cannot control. There's nothing we can do about it. All we can do is be accountable for the space we hold.
Exactly.
Which is why I want to ask Kelly the next question. Sure. I'm very curious about your view on regenerative design. What is the difference between regular design and then regenerative design as it pertains to what you do?
Yeah, so with what I do, right, I'll give you a quick example with how both of them how they are completely different. So with the regular design, you do once and you're done, it's gone. But regenerative design is you've built it, but it continues to build itself behind the scenes. Because with what you've done, right, keeps coming, keeps going, keeps growing, and keeps regenerating. That is just a simple from the term regeneration. And with what I do, for example, I will tell you this. So, yeah, I do three things, right? I do three things, except one, which I say I do, but only on the slope and only in the spring. So, but it's the three things that I do. I'm an architectural designer, so I design interiors of homes. Okay, oh. So architectural interior, I do that.
Being my best friend the rest of my life. That's it.
So, you know, with that, and that is the one that I will use as the key example. And the other thing that I do, on the other hand, is I'm the editor of WTM Media. So WTM Media just focus on pure intelligence.
Yes.
We're not competing after the big boys. No, we're not doing that. No. Our goal is to like package and distill information to improve human intelligence. That is just what we do. So we are extremely objective. We are not trying to like come up with another playbook to find a click and bait. No. If you want to be inspired, if you want to like improve your intelligence, and if you want to ensure that you consume information that would not make you feel incapable, then our platform is for you. Okay. Then our editorial is for you and things like that. And the last thing that I do is writing, of course, which is books and, you know, trying to write books out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So back to the architectural interiors. One thing that I do, I use the principles of regenerative designs, all true. And I use the HANS model, again, the HANS framework for what I do, right? So humanity, right? Talk about regeneration, humanity. Who am I designing this house for? Who are they? I try to empathize with our clients of mine. Mm-hmm. I try to feel, okay, so what time does my clients wake up? When my clients wake up, how would they use this space? How would the space be functional, beautiful, and the most importantly, efficient for them? They don't have to hit their leg on something. They don't have to feel exhausting, you know, when they see their space. So how do I do that? Empathy. And I have to ask my clients tons of questions before I design a project. Yes. Oh. Before I design a project, it's like in an interview. Sometimes my clients get tired. They're like, no, you are the designer. Just design something. Just do something. I trust you. Just do something. It's going to be fine. Just do something. It will be nice. Then I will put my designer out. Like, okay, here is the thing. I know it's going to be fine. I know it's going to be beautiful. Yes, I can do this, but I'm not designing for myself at all. I'm designing for you. I'm trying to like create something that you will not get bored of, and it will be extremely functional and gorgeous. So when people come, people are like, oh, your house is gorgeous. It's gorgeous, gorgeous, but it's
my word.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Like, oh. And all of those, right? then I think about the end part of the project. That is the sustainability part of the project. Think about it deeply. I said, okay, so this is where the regeneration lies.
I see.
I ensure that this house can be easily modified in my absence? in the sense that my client could just change a throw or pillow or just put another flower vase or another work of art, and it's then the whole place still looks cohesive.
Interwoven.
Yeah, exactly. It's still the most important word I love to use is coherence. It is it is so coherent in the sense that yes, you look, you say, okay, yes, this is the same thing. The magic still exists. So I create a system for my clients, where my clients don't need me all the time. So
it's gonna be
yes, because there are a lot of designers that will create a home for you, but you will have to call them next year so that you come do a lot of things around. But no, I create a system for my clients, and I use my system thinking background, system engineering. I create a system where my clients can easily make changes on their own, and they feel happy. They feel like they were deeply in part of it. So that is how I do. I create regenerative principles.
Juan, I love that you're focused and you can really explain what these things are, because they're brilliant in the way you've put them together in your mind. Now, before we go, and I've got maybe about 5, 7, 8, 9 minutes, I want to ask what ballet skiing is. What is ballet skiing?
Absolutely. I will tell you this, and frankly, the gods of the mountains know that I didn't know what ballet skiing was until people told me that what I was doing was ballet skiing. Okay, so picture this, you know, close your eyes with me, okay? And picture you are on the mountain in Aspen, Colorado, beautiful snow everywhere, and you see this tall black gentleman with wearing a short shorts with black legs showing off and falling and while trying to ski. Open your eyes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So here's the thing. When I learned how to ski last year, I was that guy where everyone was like, who is that? Who is that? Who is that? Because you barely see a black person skiing in Kimberley, British Columbia. But that was where I learned how to ski, because we have a ski-in, ski-out home there. And my partner, who is white, has been skiing all his life, okay? And oh, come on.
He knows. No big deal.
But you know what happened? The whole village taught me how to ski. But here is a twist. When I was trying to ski the normal rhythm, as a normal go, your parallel, all of that parallel time, I noticed I didn't like it. I noticed I wasn't having fun at all. But then my instinct said, why don't you do it in your own way? I said, sure, I love to dance. And I used to be a ballerina back in the days. I never made it to Broadway anyway, but I made it to my living room. So I decided I'm going to take that idea of dancing and I would bring it to the slope. And I think that is what I'm going to do. So when I'm listening to the Nutcracker, you know, automatically your body is in the zone.
Ballet,
and yeah. I start going, and there are videos of me like dancing. If you a person check my Instagram to Dick Kelly Dad, you will see a video of me skiing. So I noticed people started staring and they started clapping each time I ski, and I'm like, what is happening? So my partner said, hey, you keep creating magic every day, and you are so popular. Everybody knows you on the mountain. I said, what do you mean? Everybody knows you, the famous ballet skier. And I said, okay, ballet skier. What is that?
He said,
that's what you do. I said, no. He said, well, that's what we see. Even though you don't know you're doing it, that's what we see. Then he told me, he Googled ballet skiing on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where I saw that all of those hand movements. So basically, you're dancing ballet, but you're wearing skis.
Wow.
To dance ballet. Yeah. So normally, ballet skiers, their skis are shorter so that they can move their leg. But for me, I'm like, I don't want to move my leg up. No, I don't want to fall. No, I just want to do it gracefully. And the way I move my body, the way I communicate, the way I even bend down, the way I kind of like split my legs, little did I know that everything I was doing was ballet skiing. And it used to be a competitive sport in the Olympics back in the 80s until,
Wow.
So when figure skating, ice skating took, to that level, they were like, well, why have ballet skiing and figure skating? Because basically they're kind of like similar. One is in the ring and the other one is on a bandstand. So that was how
Wow.
And
Wow.
today, thanks to the universe, which each time I go out, each time I touch the mountain, I'm always extremely grateful because I know I'm home.
Oh my gosh.
That's how it feels.
We have to have you back on. It's just too much to talk about in 50 minutes. I'm just so sorry. We got to cut everything off. But I want to shout out to Sam Hassan, LA Talk Radio Station. That's my brother with another mother from another one. Anyway, and I want to thank our guest profusely, Kelly Dowd, author, architectural designer. And he speaks a little bit like Sidney Poitier. I felt that very, and Sidney Poitier was a bad boy. That boy is educated. You could feel the education, you know what I mean? And feel the brilliance. I'm like, yes, we need more of those. We need more of those. Want to shout out to all of you out there. I loke you, love you for who you are, what you are to become. And I loke you for standing up and not being afraid to be who you are. We love you for that. I would not be here without your bam likes, share, da da da. And above all, subscribe to the channel. And thank you for hanging out with me, for hanging out with us. And Kelly, we will have to have you back on. Now, where do we find your book, Power of Hands? Where do we find out more about you? What are your social media tags?
So my social media tag is just my first name and my last name. It's THE. So D Kelly Dowd, Dar Kelly Dowd, THE. KELLYDOW, there, Dark
Got
Kelly
it.
Dark, all of my social media. And you can find the book on Amazon. Just type the Power of Hands on Amazon and you find the book easily on Amazon. And the book also has audiobook in case your person just wants to like listen to
Oh,
it.
wow, that's beautiful.
Yes,
That's
so
beautiful.
there's ebook, there's audiobook, and there's the paperback and hardcover.
Okay, so the Kelly Dowd, Dowdkelly. He's not a girl, he's a guy. So, just to make sure that you look for that Kelly Dowd everywhere, the Kelly Dowd all over the social media. You can find me, Osiris underscore Mounir underscore the painter. And I will see you next week. I love you. Kisses. Mwah.
You're listening to The Osiris Mounir Show, only on LA Talk Radio.